Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing outstanding. The All-Star game rosters were announced, and obviously people are always worried about who doesn't make the team and such. And I always find people get upset about the game itself. I don't really understand it. Like, there's no reason any fan base should expect the game to be intense, because losing one of your star players to injury in basically a meaningless game would be like the worst possible scenario.
Well, that's right. We need to bring back the days when Mike Ramsey took a run at Wayne Gretzky to the All-Star game. That'll really and thrill a lot of owners out there.
Yeah, like it is what it is, right? It's there to schmooze the top clients, and the city that hosts it, their fan base gets the opportunity to see the best players in the league.
Yeah, they really do, and you hit the nail right on the head, Jason. It is an outstanding opportunity to give back to your top sponsors, and the NHL has done a fantastic job of promoting it, trying to do what they can. The game doesn't lend itself, you know, to be a spectacular event when you take the intensity out of it. But it's still, I don't know how many of these you've been to, Jason. I've been to a number of them. It's still a lot of fun. It's a fun weekend. You got to take it with a grain of salt. And the players, they do enjoy it. Even though it's not a straight break, they don't necessarily get to head down south to a beach somewhere and relax. They still enjoy being there, and it's still an honor to be there.
I want to talk about a lot of things at NHL. I was crunching some numbers, and right now, not one player is on pace to score 100 points this season. Jakub Voracek would be the closest. He's on pace to score 98. So that would be the first time since 2004, prior to the lockout, that the NHL didn't have at least one 100-point performer. Brian, the goal-scoring numbers are slowly creeping back down to the level of what they were in 2004. Should this be a concern?
I think more than just, if it happens in more than just this season, yes, you're going to see some anomalies. I'm a little bit concerned personally, because I think the goaltenders continue to get better and better, and I think the coaching continues to get better and better and more structured, and it clearly is more difficult to score than it has been in a very long time.
Is there any way to counter that? We see a lot of other leagues trying to change things to get more offense. Can the NHL do it?
Yeah, I think they still have some tricks left in the bag. You know, I mean, who can forget when the NBA was, you know, once upon a time getting carried away with too little scoring. And it was just a little removal of the hand check out of the game that opened scoring back up in the NBA. I think the NHL has some opportunities available like that with some tweaks to the rules if they feel that's a direction they want to go. You know, the whole points thing has changed dramatically, certainly since, you know, the 80s and 90s, when points were really a big driver for pay. And, you know, bonuses were much more prevalent back before 92, 93, when we went to more of a cookie cutter menu on these types of things. So I never felt like it was a real big push to create more scoring because it costs more for the teams. Well, now most of that has been mitigated. Most of that has been eliminated by the salary cap. And I do think if the NHL feels that it's something that'll make the game more exciting, they will step in. The competition committee will recommend changes. The general managers will be quick to make sure that we keep this game as exciting as possible.
The other one that's interesting, I was looking at it, the Western Conference hasn't had two 50-goal scorers in the same season since 1998. And right now, Tarasenko and Seguin are both on pace, and Joe Pavelski are on pace to do that. You know, the East has had, you know, basically since 2003, the East has had 15 50-goal seasons, then the West has only seen three. You know, the game, obviously, you look at it from a goal-scoring perspective, it's vastly different from East to West.
Yeah, it really is, and that doesn't surprise me. I mean, you're talking about, I look at a team like Detroit that's a real strong puck possession team that played in the West not too long ago, and I feel that they're having much more success in the East than they would have in the West. The West is just a heavier game. It's a lot of bigger players. I don't think it's nearly as wide open as the East is.
Why is that?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of keeping up with the Joneses. The LA Kings have built a real heavy team, the Sharks, the Ducks, the Blues. you know, not necessarily the Blackhawks, but they've got so much darn depth that, you know, it seems to the very limited amount of hitting that they do is more attributable to them having the puck than it is them not necessarily being a reasonably big and physical team. So it's just, you know, one team ran off with it, and I guess we could certainly pick on L.A. in this category and look at the way they play, and everybody else has tried to use them as the model to beat, and rightfully so. That has not been the case in the East. The Bruins certainly had success, but so did the Penguins not too long ago with a different style and a different makeup of team.
Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, your thoughts on the Edmonton Oilers? They make the coaching change for Dallas Eakins. 13 games. They've won, you know, 3 games since. I know since Todd Nelson's been the head coach himself, you know, his record is a little bit better. But do you see any reason to believe this Edmonton owner team can improve, or do they have to make serious changes to their roster?
I think that this is really maybe not the watershed moment, but this is the action that's going to lead to a watershed moment. And if you don't see an uptick this year, I wouldn't be surprised if they made major personnel moves. It seems like it's been a long time for the Oilers to get on this journey that they undertook a number of years ago, and they just haven't moved far enough along in a reasonable enough time. Now, with that said, we could probably make a case that the New York Islanders did the same thing for a number of years, and then this year, of course, they're having a magnificent year. They didn't change their coaches. They didn't change their general manager. They didn't even, you know, make massive changes with their team. What they did was add a quality goaltender to go with a couple of top 4D, which is not easy to do. And to their credit, they were brilliant in how they pulled that off. And all of a sudden, you know, the New York Islanders are certainly considered a solid top 10 team, if not higher. Could the Edmonton Oilers do that? I think it's possible, but I believe that the current management staff is going to want to see more progression from this group.
When I look at the Islanders, really, they also, you know what, Grabowski and Kuhlman, just 2 veteran forwards in your top 9. Kuhlman, obviously a bigger body, you know, smart defensive two-way player. That, you know, they just seem to add, like, that's 5 guys out of 20 in one off season. You know, to me, that's a significant change, especially because goaltending and, as you mentioned, 2 top 4 defensemen, like, that's, it's not easy to do, but it shows that it is possible if your GM's willing to make some moves.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, we could make somewhat of a case that the Oilers have certainly changed 5 players, maybe not necessarily just in the offseason, but in the last 12 months.
Yeah, not key positions, though, right? You know what I mean?
They've tried with the goaltending. They've tried on the back end with Payne, Nikitin. They tried with Pouliot. They brought in Teddy Purcell. So, you know, they're doing what they could do. The bottom line is that everybody else is trying too. And these are not easy jobs. These are not easy tasks. The Oilers haven't had, you know, necessarily unbelievable luck with their top picks. I think they've got a tremendous amount of good players. And when they do finally get these right pieces around, all that's going to come to roost. But they haven't been, you know, particularly lucky. I look at the time I was in Tampa Bay, we get Stamkos, we get Hedman. You know, that's 2 pillars for 10, 12 years that you can really build around. The Lightning continue on after I left and add Ben Bishop, and all of a sudden, you know, they've got the trifecta of which you can build a real solid team, and they've done a fantastic job in Tampa. The Oilers haven't, you know, necessarily been fortunate enough to get that, and a lot of that is just luck of the draw, particularly when you're picking first overall.
Well, yeah, and that's the situation again for the Oilers. They're 43 games into the year, Brian. They're currently in 30th place, although the Buffalo Sabres are hot on their heels, having lost 7 in a row, sitting at 2 points back in 29th spot. Carolina has the stalls back. They're starting to improve. As an organization, Brian, you can never ask your players to lose on purpose, and the Oilers have made some changes to try to improve their team, but would it be better, because the potential of Eichel and McDavid are so much higher than other guys in the draft, for the Oilers to ice a team that gives them a better chance to not win?
Well, I think clearly it would be better if they didn't win one more year. There's just no question or doubt about that. Whether or not they're going to direct in any way, shape, or form for that to happen, I just don't believe that's realistic. I've been there, you know, managing a team when it's not very good, and I can tell you we never purposely wanted to lose. At the same time, I can also recall coming down the home stretch, and in the year we drafted Hedman, John Tavares was first and Hedman was second. And I thought to myself a couple of times, my gosh, the Islanders are never going to win a game again, are they? So, you know, you're aware of what's going on, but you're never going to direct your team to lose. You're never going to purposely try to lose. At the same time, you may not make a move that you might have if you were closer to the playoffs or if it had more purpose. And, you know, is that a possibility for the Oilers? It should be if it isn't. You know, they're not going to make the playoffs, obviously, this year. That's no secret. It's just not going to happen mathematically. So now you have to look to the future. And when you look at what Dreisaitl was doing, he didn't have big numbers or anything like that. But, boy, he looked like the future is very bright for him. And he's going to be a tremendous beacon for the Oilers for years to come to get him back into junior finally. And I think it's a good move. I think the biggest problem that the teams, when you look at the teams are at the bottom of the standings, have now is they just don't have the depth, which allows them the ability to bring their players along slower. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You get the high picks, but you don't have the depth, and all of a sudden you're rushing kids. And when you look at what the Chicago Blackhawks are doing, just watching their game last night against the Minnesota Wild, and you're watching Teravainen, and he's matriculating nicely in the minors. You look at a guy like Dylan Olsen, who is really third or fourth on the depth chart in Rockford, goes on and is playing for the Florida Panthers. You can only imagine the names that a team that's as deep as the Blackhawks has in the minors. So that's something that's very, very difficult, and I think that's a real challenge for the Edmonton Oilers to make sure that they give these kids enough time to build that strong foundation so they can be leaders for years to come.
Brian Lawton, our guest. Brian, Jeff Petrie, potential unrestricted free agent. You've been an agent, right? You've also been a GM. They signed a one-year contract in the summertime, and when you look at Petrie's only ever been in Edmonton on a losing franchise, never really been close to the playoffs, if you're his agent at 27 years of age, there's really no reason why you wouldn't test free agency, would you?
I can't imagine. You know, the only way he wouldn't have is if he had been obviously re-signed immediately come January 1, I would think. You know, he signs a one-year deal, so he's not eligible to re-sign to the middle of the year. He waits, and, you know, by that time, I really think you would have had to make a decision from the organization standpoint that you want him back. That's not to say he definitely won't be back, but it definitely reduces the chances. Jeff Petrie is a guy that the general manager is going to be forced to make a decision on. Is he going to be a core piece for us when our younger players get going? Or might it be better for us to move him at the trade deadline, get another asset, and bring this whole thing up together? Those are the difficult decisions that Craig McTavish and the rest of his staff are faced with on a daily basis. And right now it looks like Jeff will definitely be a target that other teams will want, a right-handed D that appears to be more than capable as a top four defenseman, might slot in a little bit lower on a real top team. But nevertheless, this is a commodity that almost everybody that has Stanley Cup aspirations is looking for.
And I guess the question would be, looking ahead in the crystal glass last season, should the GM have signed him to a multi-year deal?
Well, I think it's really easy to play Monday morning quarterback. You know, there was a lot of questions on Jeff and his work ethic and his commitment, his toughness. I think he's a player that has just slowly gotten better every year, and I actually think he's probably a better player than, you know, maybe most of the folks around the National Hockey League would have thought. It hasn't happened quickly for him. It's okay. He's a defenseman. It takes a long, long time to perfect your trade in that position. It's obviously a difficult position to learn, but I do think that he's just continued to get better and better, and he is a very good professional at this stage. I'm not sure I would have said that, you know, in the off season. I think his progress has continued, and that's been a real bright spot for him. And it's going to be a bright spot for the organization either way, because they're going to re-sign him or they're going to get more value for him if they decide to trade him.
What do you think he could garner at this point as a return?
Right now, as a return, you have to put a premium, you know, number one on defenseman, number two on a right-handed defenseman, and number three on a guy that you believe, you know, certainly could slot into a top four. So I think they're going to get an excellent return. I think you're going to get a real legitimate young prospect or a potential first-round pick for him. It depends how it starts to shake out as we get closer here. We saw Pittsburgh identify David Perron and wanted a top six guy, and they paid for it. Is somebody else going to do that with Jeff Petrie? A lot of it has to do with what the opportunities are out there. When I think of right-handed D, that may be a similar comparison. There aren't a whole bunch of them. Mike Green's name continues to float around out there, but the Washington Capitals are having a fantastic season, and Mike Green has fit in very nicely there. His minutes have come down, but his production has been strong, and his play has been stronger than it's been in a while. So, you know, what happens with a guy like him is certainly going to dictate what happens with a guy like Jeff Petrie.
Brian, always good to catch up with you, man. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure, Jason. Thank you very much.